Why is it that friendships, some friendships, can be so difficult? I mentioned last week as we started off this new series that we all want to be loved, I'm entitling it, that God created us for friendship. When He made us as human beings, He fashioned us and He molded us to where we have a craving inside for a relationship, for friendship with other people. We were made not to be isolated or lonely. We were made to be in community. But why is it that sometimes in our attempt to try to build that community or cultivate that community, things can be so difficult? Sometimes friendships can be hard. Marriages can end in divorce. Roommates cannot get along. Sometimes good Christian people can let us down. Churches can split. And sometimes good close friends can sever their relationship because of broken hearts and bitterness. And then for some of us, it's hard for us to develop friendships. Maybe you struggle a little bit because maybe you're introverted, a little more shy than others, and so it's hard for you to open yourself up to other people, as we talked about last week, and develop good friendships with others. Still, others of us, we struggle with time. We're just too busy with work and other demands. We just don't have time to develop the good, strong Christian friendships that we need. And then there are others of us that we've tried to do that. We've tried to reach out and develop a good Christian friendship, but it just hasn't worked out so well. Or maybe we've tried to do that and we've reached out to someone, opened ourselves up to someone else, and they didn't really return the feeling. There's an old sketch in the Seinfeld show where Jerry Seinfeld has just met this guy named Keith Hernandez. And Keith asked Jerry to help him move. Well, Jerry's kind of taken aback by this because in his mind, to help a friend move, I mean, that's a big step in a friendship. That's going the next level. And so he's not sure if he should do that or not. And so he goes to Kramer and George and says, "Hey, you know, what do you think about this? I met Keith Hernandez and he asked me to move, help him move." I said, "Oh, no, what'd you tell him?" "Well," I said, "yes, I can't believe this, Jerry. You're going deeper in your friendship. Before you know it, he's going to ask you to drive you to the airport." And sometimes friendship can create ambiguity like that. Is that person really a good friend with me, or are we just kind of acquaintances? Do we want to go a little deeper in our friendship, or just want to keep at the same level? And then some cases, maybe, do I really want to stay friends with this person at all? Why are friendships so difficult? And because they're difficult and hard and sometimes difficult to develop, and sometimes because they're so ambiguous, it can create stress in our life. I read a poll recently that said 2/3 of the people in the poll said that the leading stressor in their life are friendships, relationships. That's the biggest thing that gives them stress, is the ambiguity and the difficulties and the heartache that comes from friendship. And why is that the case? God made us to desire friendship. And why is it so hard? Why does it give us, for some of us, so much hurt and create so much ambiguity? Maybe one of the reasons why that's the case, there's a variety of reasons, but maybe one of the reasons is because maybe we don't fully know what it means to be a friend. Maybe sometimes we get confused on what it truly means to be a Christian friend. I want you to take your Bibles and open them to 1 Samuel chapter 20. 1 Samuel chapter 20. Last week, we introduced the classic biblical friendship of David and Jonathan and how they were one in soul. Their spirits were together. Well, pretty soon, as we move into chapter 19 of 1 Samuel, there's some stress that comes into their friendship. And the stress is that Jonathan's dad, Saul, is jealous of David. After all, David has been this valiant warrior, and he has defeated Goliath, the great Philistine, and he's gone into other battles, and every battle that he's in, because the Lord's on his side, he wins, and he succeeds. And he gains a lot of fame because of that. And Saul sees that, and he's envious of that. And he thinks, David's going to try to take my throne. And so he makes the decision that David needs to be eliminated. Starts to take some attempts at trying to kill him. Even announces to his whole household, including Jonathan, we have got to kill David. And Jonathan stands up for his friend and says, Dad, David has done nothing against you. He is completely innocent. He has just gone out and been loyal to you and been faithful to you and done very well when he's fought in battles. Why should we kill him? And Saul hears his son's advice and says, okay, son, you're right about this. I'll stop trying to kill David. Well, just as quickly as he says that and Jonathan leaves the room, Saul gets right back at it in trying to find a way to get rid of David. And in the rest of chapter 19, he makes three more attempts at David's life. One of the attempts is he takes a spear and tries to pin him against the wall. The second attempt is he sends some soldiers to David's house to arrest him. Thankfully, his wife, Michal, helps him out, helps him escape to a town called Ramah. And then Saul sends soldiers, and then eventually he goes himself to Ramah to try to apprehend David and to kill him. And so as we come to the end of chapter 19, heading into 1 Samuel chapter 20, David is scared. Saul is after him. And he is concerned, he is emotional, and so he decides to turn to his best friend, Jonathan, for help. And he comes to Jonathan, the beginning of the chapter, and he says, Jonathan, I want you to tell me right now, have I done anything to make me guilty? Have I done anything that is wrong in the eyes of the Lord and the eyes of the king? Because your dad is after me. And Jonathan says, no way, You have not done anything wrong. You are completely innocent. And my dad is not after you. He told me that he is not after you. And David says, oh, he's pulling a fast one on you. He is completely trying to kill me. And the way David puts it says, there's a step between me and death. And Jonathan says, well, let me go figure this out. Let me go talk to dad and see what his intentions really are. And so they hash out this plan. The plan is that there's going to be a festival coming up soon, the New Moon Feast. And so David is conveniently not going to be there, and Jonathan's going to gauge the reaction of Saul, and if he's not bothered, then everything's okay. If Saul is bothered, then we know that there's trouble. Then they decide that there's going to be a plan on how to report what they find out, because there could be spies watching them. And so the plan is that Jonathan is going to go out for target practice, take his bow, take his arrows, go out for target practice, shoot a few arrows. And he's going to send the servant to go get them. And if he tells the servant, no, come back, the arrows are on this side, then everything's okay. If he tells the servant, no, you need to go farther, the arrows are beyond you, then that means that there's trouble. And Saul's after David. So they have this plan that they have developed. Now, what I want you to notice in 1 Samuel 20, verse 8, I want you to notice what David tells Jonathan as they're working out this plan. In verse 8, it says, as for you, this is David talking, as for you, show kindness to your servant, for you have brought him into a covenant with you before the Lord. Now, if you are an underlining kind of person, that is a phrase that I want you to underline. Show kindness to your servant. Because that word, show kindness, in Hebrew, is the word chesed. Say it with me, please. Chesed. Our favorite Hebrew word. The word can be translated grace, mercy, love, kindness, sometimes in some versions, loving kindness. It's the most important Hebrew word in all of the Old Testament, because fundamentally what the word means is covenant love. Covenant love. David says to Jonathan, as they're working out this plan of him going to his dad, he says, Jonathan, can you show me covenant love? Love. Covenant love. Now, David says that because he understands the predicament that Jonathan is in. Jonathan has an incredible dilemma. Look at this with me on the screen. On the one side, Jonathan has Saul, his dad. And there has to be a part of Jonathan that wants to be faithful and loyal to his dad. To find respect in his dad's eyes. And after all, his dad is the king. He wants to be loyal to the king. And so there's got to be a part of him that wants to do that, whatever his dad wants to do. And then there's got to be another part of Jonathan that's concerned about his own self. I'm sure that there was a time in Jonathan's life where he dreamed and had visions about being king. He was the prince, right? And so I'm sure that there are many occasions where he thought about, you know, someday I'm going to be the one in charge, and here's the way I'm going to do it. He had to have those thoughts. And the idea and the situation here is that he's going to give away those ideas because it seems as if David is rising up to the throne. And so there's a part of them that has to be concerned about himself. And then there's David, his friend, the one that he's gotten to know, who needs his help. And so Jonathan is caught between all three of these things in a triangle. And what is he going to do? And David knows that he's in the midst of this triangle between his dad and himself and David. And so he says, "Can you show me covenant love? You gave me your armor a while back. Remember that? You told me that you were going to make a covenant with me and be my friend. Can you stay true to that? Can you show me covenant love?" Maybe one of the ancient Christian writers that has written the most on friendship is a guy named Aelred of Reval. He's a 12th century monk who lived in England, and he wrote a book called Spiritual Friendship. And the way that he talked about friendship is he categorized it into three ways. He says there's three kinds of friendships. Number one, there are carnal friendships. These are friendships where you join up with someone, you become friends with someone, and that person is up to no good. They're just doing bad things, evil things, and truth be told, you probably joined up with them because you want to join in those things. That's a carnal friendship. Secondly, he says there are worldly friendships. Worldly friendships are where you become friends with someone because of the benefit that you'll receive. You become friends with someone because they have a lot of popularity and you want to be popular. Or you become friends with someone because, well, they'll just help your business. They'll help your practice. I mean, you'll get more deals and more sales if you become friends with that person. Or you become friends with someone because they give you money or they give you nice things and they benefit you in some way, and that's why you're their friend. That's a worldly friendship. And then third, Aelred said there's spiritual friendship, true friendship. And this is where you're friend with someone, not because of what you're going to gain, not what you're going to benefit from. You're a friend with them because you love them and you care for them. You want to put their needs above your own. Now, if you take these three categories and you lay them over the dilemma of Jonathan, it seems to all make sense, right? On the one hand, Jonathan could join up with Saul, his dad, and have a carnal friendship. His dad's plotting in an evil manner to eliminate David. He could join in with that, be a part of that, and have a carnal friendship. On the other hand, he could make the determination that my friendship with David was just a worldly friendship. I mean, after all, he was the big shot after he defeated Goliath. It was good for my status to become his friend, and so I did, and that was good, and that was fine, but now it's not so good. Now it's not going to benefit me at all to be David's friend, so I'm just going to have to let David go, recuse myself, and say, "David, I'm sorry. Sorry you're having this conflict between me and you and my dad, but I'm just going to have to let you guys figure it out because there's nothing in it for me." He could do that. Or he could say, "No, David, I have a true spiritual friendship with you. This friendship is about me loving you, caring for you, putting your needs above my own." And so what is Jonathan going to do? How is he going to handle this dilemma? Is he going to say, "It's all about me, and David, frankly, this friendship is not going to benefit me any longer, and so sorry, I'm out of it"? Or is he going to stand up and have a true friendship? Now, I mentioned last week that I wanted to preach on this subject for a couple of reasons. Number one, because I think it goes well with our theme. If we're going to be a church where grace overflows, then we need to be a place where someone can come in and not just experience friendliness, but where they can come in and find a friend. Secondly, I wanted to preach on this subject because isolation and loneliness is something that a lot of people experience. And so I think it's very important and relevant for us to talk about Christian friendship. But the third reason, and I didn't mention this last week, the third reason why I want to preach on this subject, and I'm just going to be a little confessional here, is I think sometimes I'm not a very good friend. That I get busy with all my things and agenda and everything that I'm involved in, and I'm not a very good friend to others. And often what I do is I look at my friends through a selfish point of view. And I look at my friends for what they benefit and how they benefit me. And I'll reach out to my friends when I need their help. And when friends are a drag on me, then, well, I just need to back away from them. That I view my friendships through a selfish point of view. And I don't think I'm the only one that does that. Last week, I had you guys write down three Christian friends in your life to try to reach out to them. And I hope you did that this past week. But if I was to come up to you and you were to show me that list, then tell me about one of those three friends, what would you say? Probably most of us would say something like this. Well, this person is so great. They always make me laugh. They're always fun to be around. They always help me out. They give me good advice. They're always wise in the things they say to me. Now stop for a second. If that's the way you would describe your friend, everything that I've just said is focused on who? Me. They make me laugh. They make me feel good. They give me good advice. They make me have help if I need help. It's all about me. And typically, that's the way we view friendship. I'm going to get involved in a friendship, in a relationship, because of what it's going to do for me. And the question of 1 Samuel 20 is that the way Jonathan views friendship? Because if Jonathan views friendship in that way of what it brings to me, then he's going to tell David, sorry, bud, this is a tough spot that you're in, but I can't help you. It's just between you and Dad, because there's nothing in it for Jonathan. And Jonathan knows that. He knows there's nothing in it for him. And so what does he do? The festival comes. Jonathan is there. David's not. First day, Saul doesn't say anything. Second day, Saul says something. Anybody know where David is? Jonathan speaks up and says, well, David asked if he could go to spend some time with his family in Bethlehem. And Saul's anger rages. And notice what he says as he speaks to his son. He says, you perverse and rebellious son of a perverse, rebellious woman. In other words, he disowns him right there. You're not a son of mine. Don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse? Can't even mention his name. The son of Jesse, to your own shame. You have become friends with someone who is not going to benefit you at all, Saul says. You're going to lose the throne because you're friends with David. And Jonathan stands up for his friend and he says, what has he done wrong? Where is he guilty? Why do you want him dead? Saul picks up that spear, maybe the same spear that he had thrown at David. And he hurls it at his own son. And Jonathan is so angry, he leaps, grabs his bow, grabs his arrows, goes out for target practice, takes the arrows and sends them really far, and the servant starts to go look for them, and he tells the servant, they're beyond you. They're beyond you. And David's hiding in the bushes, and he gets the message. There's trouble. Saul's after him. Jonathan tells the servant, take those arrows and go back into the house. And when the servant leaves, David steps out. And for a moment, they embrace and they cry. Because both of them understand what has just happened. David, as long as Saul lives, David's going to be a fugitive, looking behind his shoulder, looking behind his back to see if anyone's there. He's going to be a fugitive as long as Saul is alive. And then number two, Jonathan understands what this means. His household is now enemies to David. And when David takes the throne, it's going to be because his household has crumbled. Jonathan knows that. He knows the consequences of his decision. But when they leave, they have to part. When they leave, Jonathan tells him, go in peace. Because as for you and me, we have sworn our friendship. We're friends. Jonathan says, we are friends. Go in peace. Jonathan was willing to put David's needs above his own, even at the cost of his own ability to be on the throne. And that's what it means to be a friend. It's not looking at someone through a selfish point of view. Instead, it's looking at someone with sacrificial love and putting their needs above our own. And I sometimes wonder if all of our friendship problems and all of our relationship difficulties and marriage issues would probably go away if we would just change the way we understood what it meant to be a friend. If we changed and saw that friendship is not about selfishness and what I can receive, it's instead about service and what I can give. It's not about someone helping me out and making me feel good. It's about me learning how to be a servant and helping someone else. It's about me reaching out to someone else and loving them sacrificially. I have two daughters in my household, as you all know. And so over the past 6 months, as they have gone to bed, the CD that they have listened to over and over again, you can probably imagine, is the soundtrack of Frozen. I can sing those songs by heart. I won't do that right now. But the movie Frozen is a very interesting movie, I think, because it doesn't deliver what we've come to expect from Disney. If you haven't seen the movie, close your ears because I'm going to ruin it right now for you. It's a story of two sisters, Elsa and Anna. Elsa has these powers to freeze things, but she can't control the powers, and so she's blocked everybody, shut herself up from everybody. But Anna's trying to reach out to her, trying to become her friend, trying to be a good sister, and trying to reach out to her in some way, and then accidentally, Elsa freezes her heart. Well, the only thing that can thaw a frozen heart is an act of true love. And it seems that her true love, Anna's true love, is Prince Hans. Prince Hans is back at the palace, so they go to Prince Hans for him to kiss her and make everything okay, but it turns out that Prince Hans had a worldly friendship with Anna. He just wanted to become her friend for what he could get, and now that there's nothing to get anymore, he's ready for her to die. But then she realizes there's this guy named Kristoff. Kristoff was just this ordinary guy who sold ice. But he had been very helpful to her along the way, would take her up to the North Mountain so that she could see Elsa. He helped her when the marshmallow creature tried to attack. He helped take her back to the palace so that Prince Hans could kiss her. He was just a great help. He was a servant. And she realizes that, and she decides, he's my true love. I need to kiss Kristoff. And so there's this climactic moment in the movie where she's limping her way because she's almost about to die, and Kristoff is running to her, and we know what to expect. We've seen the Disney movies, haven't we? We know what's going to expect. They're gonna get there. They're gonna kiss. Everything's gonna be fine. She'll be feeling good, and they will live happily ever after. And right at the moment when they're just about to meet, Anna sees in the corner of her eye Elsa, and Prince Hans is getting ready to kill Elsa, and she steps in front of her sister and takes the blow. And Disney sets aside romance for friendship. And there's this great line right before the climactic scene. Anna is in the fireplace room trying to stay warm, and Olaf, sorry, Olaf, wherever you are, Olaf, the snowman, is there. And Anna says, I don't know what love is. And Olaf says, I do. Love is putting someone else's needs above your own. And that's what Anna did. She put the needs of her sister above her own. That's what Jonathan did. Put the needs of David above his own. That's what Jesus did, right? When Jesus went to the cross, as Jim talked about, when he went to the cross and suffered and died, it was not for his own benefit. It was not so he could gain something. He went to the cross because we had a need. We needed forgiveness. We needed reconciliation. We needed restoration. And so Jesus puts our needs above his own. And that's what friendship is all about. It's learning to love as Jesus loved. Learning to love someone, whether it's our sister or our brother or our neighbor, learning to love someone as Jesus loves people, where we sacrificially put their needs above our own. Jesus said it best in John 15, "Greater love has no man than this, than he laid down his life for his friends." That's what Anna did. That's what Jonathan did. That's what Jesus did. And church, that is what it means. That is the definition of what it means to be a Christian friend. I'm going to ask our shepherds to go ahead and get in their place. And if you've been looking at friendship through the wrong perspective, selfish perspective, what's in it for me, I encourage you during our song to just walk to one of our elders and say, "Pray for me, because I want to be a Christian friend. I want to be a Christian friend." If there's a friendship situation in your life that is difficult and is causing hardship in your life, walk to one of our elders during this song. They'll pray with you. Or if you're ready to become a Christian, be baptized into Christ, just walk to the front and we'll help you. Please come as together we stand and sing.